Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Think about what can go right when you plan for the future. Talk to a financial broker and start your savings plan today.
A Dublin mother whose 17-year-old son died by suicide over 8 years ago fears her child's death will be in vain unless urgent changes are made to children's mental health services. Elaine Clear was speaking with her reporter Barry Lenehan in the wake of a scathing review of CAMHS by the Mental Health Commission. And Barry is with me now. What more can you tell us?
Over 24 hours on, the fallout continues from yesterday's devastating report into failures in our child mental health services. The Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, told the Dáil this afternoon how the findings were of great concern to him. The Irish Medical Organisation has this evening dismissed as naive a suggestion by the Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, that the new consultant contract would help address issues in CAMHS. While SIPTU, the trade union, it wants an urgent meeting with government to discuss safe staffing levels in the service. But for one Dublin mother, Elaine Clear, yesterday's report brings uncomfortable reminders of her own son's care in CAMHS. The controversy in Kerry around the prescribing of children brings back distressing memories too, and it makes her think that little has changed in the 8.5 years since her son, Dan Hogan, died by suicide at just 17 years of age.
What happened in Dan's case?
On the surface, Dan had it all. A popular rugby player, the class captain in his secondary school in Rathmines. But he also had what Elaine has described, a parallel life. At the age of 13, he was referred to CAMHS, the Lucina Clinic in Dublin, suffering from anxiety, depression and low mood. And he was immediately prescribed the heavy antipsychotic risperidone.
He was tall, he was handsome, he had eyes that sparkled, he was sporty, he was witty, he had us in stitches a lot of the time, he had wonderful friends, but his passion was rugby. He was on the senior squad from the transition year as tight head prop, and Jack McGrath was coaching him one-to-one.
At what stage was Dan referred to Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, or CAMHS? What age was he?
He was about 13, so he had just been referred by his GP. We brought him to the GP, said, look, he seems to be suffering from anxiety. And so, yeah, we were referred to Lucina.
Referred to Lucina, referred to CAMHS with, you thought, symptoms of anxiety.
He kept saying, there's something wrong with me, there's something wrong with me. Coincidentally, at that time, I just thought, okay, through the school, I went and I got a child psychologist to assess him, to just cover every angle. And sure enough, he was diagnosed with dyslexia and he was diagnosed with ADHD as well. I didn't suspect that he had that because he didn't have sort of hyperactivity or anything. It was just his concentration was very poor when it came to doing homework. So once we understood that, I thought, okay, well, maybe that's all of this. However, when we brought him to CAMHS, and the first thing is he was put on risperidone. We were told this is going to take a while for it to work, but it didn't seem to work. Dan reacted very negatively. At that point, for example, when you went into Lucina, there was a large waiting room. There was nothing on the walls that signified that this was a place for teenagers. There were little chairs that were pink and blue and like for 4-year-olds, and on the walls there were pictures of the West of Ireland, you know, just sort of paintings, like Hello magazines on the table. There was nothing to indicate that this is a place for teenagers. There would have been on average about, say, 6 or 8 kids in the room with parents in their school uniform. When Dan's name was called out, we would get up and we would leave and go into this to visit the psychiatrist.
But that was a source of anxiety as well.
There was no anonymity. On one hand, Dan was sort of, he was a bit of a little hero in his little world. And then on the other side, there was this. It sort of reinforced the stigma of being in something wrong with him and being put on medication. We sort of felt, oh Lord, it seemed to be dulling his mind a bit, put on weight.
Talk to me about the medication. He was put on it at 13.
Yeah.
Different sources, different guidance indicates that risperidone, for instance, should only be issued as a short term or an emergency measure. So Dan, you say, didn't react well to it.
No. And then when we discovered that, when we figured then that the risperidone wasn't working, then they put him on Prozac. At around 15, then 15, 16, he was on Prozac.
How long was he on the risperidone for?
About 2 years.
as a nurse yourself,
yeah,
did you have concerns at the start over potential diagnoses and over that initial move to medication?
Well, I saw Dan's anxiety. To a large extent, myself and John, we managed him. Problem was that when we brought Dan to CAMHS, it was medication. For every time we went there, it would be like 2-3 weeks before we knew, will this dose work? So there was long spells between each visit. You do your best, but I feel that had somebody come into our home, visited us within our Dan's environment, that it would have been a lot more supportive, and I felt we would have been on much firmer ground, and it'd be something similar to a public health nurse, but on a mental health level.
And that's Elaine Clear, Dan's mum. What happened next in Bury?
One of the striking features of yesterday's report was the number of families seeking private therapy, often far away from their home. And this was something which happened in Elaine and Dan's case as well. They sourced private psychotherapy for Dan in County Kildare. And Elaine feels this really helped in her son's case and was frustrated that she couldn't afford more of this type of treatment more regularly, and feels ultimately there should be greater emphasis on talk therapy, therapeutic interventions within child mental health services. However, come the spring-summer of 2014, Dan was struggling again, and Elaine remembers taking Dan to a hospital emergency department where he was left without being treated after waiting for 5 hours. After this, Dan spent a month at St Joseph's Adolescent Inpatient Unit in Dublin's Fairview, brought there by Elaine's father and her husband John, and 3 weeks after leaving the unit, Dan died by suicide.
Dan said, oh my God, this was not what he had expected. He had expected somewhere soft, gentle, and instead there were 5 locked doors from the outside up to the unit. It was all, everything was suicide proof, and Dan reacted really negatively. He said, be begged, please don't put me in here. When John was with the psychiatrist, as John says, he felt as though a gun was put to his head. He was told that if you don't sign him in, they were going to go ahead and get a court order. So John rang me. Look, they're after saying that if we don't sign him in, they're going to get a court order. And I go, what? Because Dan had been in school the day before. There was no melodrama. Dan had asked for help. He wasn't psychotic at any point. You know, he had asked for help. And so we thought, what's going on here? And then I said, you know what? If Dan ever wants to get a J1 visa to go to America, we don't want any criminal or any sort of court order on his record. So I said, no, John, go ahead and we'll sign him in, Dan.
And how did he get on there?
Dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. He panicked. He was given lorazepam 3 times a day and he panicked. It was like a prison for him. While the people were lovely, Dan begged, let me out. I got a call. It was him whispering, please, Mom, help me, get me out of here. Please, please, please. But I was told, no, you can't be with him. They have a blanket ban against every parent or loved person to remain with their child overnight.
And you wanted to stay overnight. You felt it would have helped him.
Absolutely. There was a big soft leather chair in the room, but no parent is allowed to stay there. Like for me, I'm paediatric trained. I've trained, you know, as a paediatric nurse. I had never come across a situation where a parent was not allowed to be with their kid in a crisis. Dan was a rugby player. Here he was, reduced from being a 17-year-old to a 7-year-old. He was petrified. And yet, I wasn't allowed to remain with him. And that, to this day, is something I have to learn to live with. And while Dan was in there, heavily medicated, this was an total anathema to the kind of person that he was.
The spokesperson for the facility and for the HSE has said that residents can meet in private and longer family visits can be accommodated on request.
I'm talking about being with my son overnight when he was in a crisis. There is no facility to remain with your kid overnight during a crisis. By the time he was discharged, Dan had developed agoraphobia. Now he was different. He wanted to just stay at home. I think he made the decision that he wasn't going to live anymore. That he actually wrote, he said, if that's the help, he said, then I'm that's what he wrote.
He'd been keeping a diary at that stage. Oh. What ultimately happened when he was discharged from the inpatient unit?
Yeah.
How short was the time frame to his death?
It was 3 weeks. 3 weeks afterwards.
Very sad thinking back on all of it and very difficult all these years later.
Yeah. It's just unbelievable. It's shocking. It's unbelievable. I still can't believe that he's gone. For 17 years, every single day, we would have... I mean, we adored Dan. He was a great person. He was a great kid and he had an awful lot to offer. And then suddenly, wham, bang, he's gone.
What has the HSE said, Barry, in response to some of the concerns raised there by Elaine?
The executive says it can't comment on individual cases. However, it says it's committed to providing a high-quality mental health service accessible to all patients in line with the requirements of national policy and legislation. And on the issue of voluntary or involuntary admission, it says it's a complex clinical decision which depends on the young person's presentation and or the agreement of the family to support an admission.
What does Elaine want to happen now then?
The inquest into Dan's death in 2016 made two recommendations. Ultimately, that families should be allowed to stay with a loved one in a psychiatric unit overnight, should it be of assistance. And also that advice should be given, and this has been backed up in various medical journals, that those who are in an inpatient unit, an inpatient psychiatric unit, have an increased risk of death by suicide within the 3 months after their discharge. Now, Elaine and her son Rory, they battled for years for a report into Dan's death, which they ultimately got. They want to see meaningful change of CAMHS. And Elaine, she's part of HUG, the Healing Untold Grief Group, which is a network of parents and families who've been bereaved, their children died by suicide, often after an engagement with CAMHS, or in three cases after not receiving an appointment at all from the service. Elaine is also looking to erect and construct a peace of mind garden in Dublin, in Balls Bridge, but 8.5 years after seeing her son Dan die by suicide, 8.5 years of thinking he could still be here, and 8.5 years of campaigning for change in the services as well. She's been giving me her reaction to this week's developments.
I just feel it's coming out into the open. Finally, finally, finally. Like, Dan died 8.5 years ago, and even that was the end of Dan's experience, of our experience with CAMHS. But our experience with CAMHS for the previous 6 years was substandard. For the first time, I have a little bit of hope that there might be a change to the system. If there aren't enough psychiatrists, then bring in more registered, qualified, experienced psychotherapists. Because in my experience and in the experience of others from HUG, it was the psychotherapy that had the most benefit. The medication invariably didn't work. And it, in fact, had side effects that were detrimental. These kids need to be assessed more, but there should be more multidisciplinary involvement with their care. It should be more holistic instead of just medication.
Hope on one level, but a sense of frustration or upset on another as
Completely.
Well.
Instead of trying and crying for that they can't get the more resources, to just expand out and bring in more experienced people. Like, I haven't slept at all last night. And every time I go to talk about it, it's really hard. But I will do it, and I'll do it over and over until there's some change, so that it'll be different for the next kid. We need more resources for our kids, and especially since COVID. Since COVID, the numbers of people suffering from mental illness now, from anxiety and from depression, has increased exponentially.
How are you doing now, and how's the family doing?
Well, myself and John, we have split up. We fell apart. But Rory is great, and he has gone from strength to strength, and he is amazing. And I'm very lucky to have my job. I love my job.
In spite of the upset, the grief, yeah. There's a real sense of fight in the family at the moment as well, isn't there?
The last thing is we want Dan's death to be in vain, and all the other kids, because in HUG, I see the parents of the other children who have died within the CAMHS service or who didn't even get into CAMHS. And we just need to stop it. We need to stand up and we need to articulate. And I've nothing to lose anymore, so I will do it. And I know there are others in the same boat as me.
And that is Elaine Clear speaking with Barry Lenehan. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in Barry's report this evening, help is available. You can just visit rte.ie/helplines.